Kid Innovations Podcast for Monday, October 17th, 2005, show number 32, brought to you from Palo Alto, California. Hello, and welcome to the Kid Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. While I'm slowly catching up, hopefully get back to a normal weekend schedule of putting the podcast up next weekend. This is Monday, so I'm only one day late. Next week, I will be in London. So if any of the listeners, if you're in the area and you want to get together, I will be in London next Saturday and Sunday. If you want to get together, just drop me an email and we'll see if the schedules will work out. Thanks for all the feedback on email. I'm slowly catching up on that also, but rest assured that I will reply to your email eventually. It's just the backlog has caught me off guard, so I'm still trying to get through the podcast emails along with digging out of the normal business emails when you're offline for a week. It takes me normally a couple of weeks to finally get caught back up to normal. Normally, I play audio feedback at the end of the show. However, I want to play two audio snippets here at the beginning. The first is feedback on the podcast from my experiences in New Orleans a few weeks back. So take a listen.
Hi, Phil. This is Andrew Darlow. I just wanted to say how much your October 4th podcast impacted me personally. I have learned in the past that to get the real news on a place, you sort of have to be on the ground, and you really laid out quite a picture of what it was like for you in New Orleans, dealing with everything that you did and contributing in the way that you did. So I encourage all your listeners to share the link to your podcast and you know, let people know about it so that it can, you know, keep people's minds on the tragedy and help with the relief. Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye.
The feedback on the Katrina Innovations podcast has been overwhelming. The amount of emails, Skype messages that I've received from people that heard that podcast and was able to, through that podcast, I was able to experience at least a little bit of what it was like or what it is like for the survivors down there has been very touching. Now, Andrew, in the previous podcast, I mean, the previous audio snippet kind of gave you some audio feedback on what he felt from that podcast. But Andrew then went beyond sending me just a voicemail feedback to the point of creating an audio promo that he then sent to Adam Curry at the Daily Source Code. Adam played that audio comment on last Friday's Daily Source Code, and here is what Adam played.
Hey Adam, this is Andrew Darlow. I'm a photographer and editorial director of a magazine published out of Long Island, New York. I've been totally hooked on podcasting for quite a while, thanks in great part to you. Thank you. And I've listened to just about every Daily Source Code since May, and I also listen regularly to about 60 other great podcasts. I also keep writing about podcasting and how it benefits graphic arts professionals in my editor's letters. Since there are so many great podcasts about Photoshop and imaging-related things and technology. And I also hope to have my own podcast sometime soon. Your recent bedcast with your lovely wife, Patricia, was really great, and I'd love to hear more of those. Also, the two songs that you played with Patricia singing when you were in San Francisco, I thought were fantastic, so feel free to bring more of those to us. I'm also leaving this message because I just listened to one of the podcasts that I subscribe to called Killer Innovations by Phil McKinney. Phil was recently in New Orleans for a week, helping out in the relief effort in a number of ways. And his words are what really makes podcasting such a powerful medium. He speaks at length about the situation there as of about 10 days ago, straight from the heart and directly from his personal experience. And in a way, it was sort of like when you were in San Francisco doing your sound seeing tour at 2 or 3 a.m. You just get a really good sense of what life is really like and what people are faced with straight up without the dramatic music and without the 30-second sound bites. The podcast can be found at killerinnovations.com, and the show is from October 3rd. The show is also available in iTunes. I highly recommend listening, and as Phil says, if people do have the means to continue supporting the relief effort, they do really need it. Keep up the great work, and I hope that we're able to meet at the big podcast expo in California next month if you're planning to attend. Bye-bye.
And all I can say is thanks. Thanks for the support. The feedback and interactions that I get from you, the listeners, is what motivates me to keep this up. So again, I'm touched, and I just want to say thank you. Last week, I stated that I was looking to go back to New Orleans. However, I was unable to get there. Can you believe this? There were no seats available on flights in order to get me to New Orleans and then turn around, and I had to be back here in San Francisco today. So I missed an opportunity to go back to New Orleans this weekend, and I'm actually looking to go back to New Orleans here 2 to 3 weeks out, most likely towards the early part of November. So if any of you are interested in potentially going down to New Orleans with me the next time, drop me an email, and once I have a date finalized, then I can let you know and we can get that coordinated. I've posted photos from both Gulfport, Mississippi and New Orleans, so you can go to the Killer Innovations site, killerinnovations.com, and click on the photo that's posted as the October 15th blog posting. Or if you are familiar with how to get into the KI community site, you can go to the KI community site and look at the bottom. I've created a new category for the Hurricane Katrina relief. As always, if you want to reach me, you can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can leave me a voicemail feedback line at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at Phil_McKinney. One comment on the voicemail feedback. Please make sure that you make the call from a phone line that is at least somewhat decent quality. I got one message from Jonathan, but I was unable to hear the message. So, Jonathan, if you want to call back in and leave the voicemail feedback comment again, then I'll play it in an upcoming show. Moving on to this week's content, segment number one. Innovation mentoring. Now, a number of listeners keep asking, probably the most common question I get on email or on Skype is why? Why am I devoting this much time to creating this podcast? And why do I give away all of this expertise and experience? There are consultants out there who make, you know, very nice salaries, helping individuals and companies to innovate or be creative. Well, first off, I'm a believer that you get back more than you give. So I kind of view this as just my little bit that I can give back to individuals to either make them more successful in their careers, help them in their personal lives, help people to come up with new creative ideas to hopefully solve some significant social issues, whether that be new kinds of medicines, new kinds of technologies, who knows. And in my case, I had an early mentor, someone who was willing to make the investment in me, someone who was willing to share their expertise and their experience. Early on in this mentoring process, he said that it would hit me at some age in the future, and I was pretty young when this particular individual selected me out and stepped up to play this mentoring role for me. But he made this proclamation, you know, what was I? It's probably, 20, 21 at the time maybe. And he said that at some age in the future, I would understand the investment he made and that my only obligation was to mentor others in the same way. Well, now I'm hitting middle age here, and I can tell you that over the last couple of years, what he said to me has really come to roost. Now, this particular mentor that I had, a guy by the name of Robert Davis, or as I always called him, was Bob Davis. Bob was one of the early thought leaders in the software industry. So this was back in the 70s and 80s. He was one of the original founders with John Cullinane at Cullinet. Now, Cullinet is the part of Computer Associates. He went on to found two other significant software companies. And Bob plucked me right out of college and took this know-it-all kid coming right out of the university to kind of harness my energies into helping me to really get my feet underneath me in both of my career, but also really in the understanding of the human potential. You know, I can really honestly say that it was Bob who taught me how to think. You know, coming out of college and going through the normal educational school systems, I can honestly say that most universities do not teach you how to think. They teach you how to memorize. They teach you how to regurgitate answers, but they really don't teach you how to think, how to analyze. Now, some universities are much better than others, but in my case, and I won't say the university that I went to, you know, I can honestly say that it was not something place where I learned how to think. In this case, Bob also taught me how to be creative, how to create, how to unleash the potential, really, to come up with those new kinds of ideas, how to solve problems, how to break new ground where nobody else has been. In our case, we were developing software, and this was 1983, 1984 for the IBM PC. So this was, you know, brand new product when the IBM PC had a rip-roaring 64K of memory and a floppy disk drive that stored 320K on a floppy. And all you had was green screen, character-based, no graphics. And so we were creating software for that market that went on to, actually the software went on to be fairly successful. But we were breaking new ground. We were creating things that that had never existed. And it was Bob who really took me under the wings as a new college kid coming out trying to put my fingerprint on the industry, but also helped me funnel it in the right way. And I always also joke with Bob. He also gave me more than enough rope to hang myself. But he was always there, really, to be that encouraging, to kind of share the lessons learned. At this point, he was already, you know, he was middle-aged, had gone through the learning curve himself, and was looking to share that learning curve to help reduce the bumps and bruises that invariably comes with people who are coming into the field or who are getting ready to come out of college and start their careers. It's interesting that a lot of listeners that I get feedback from for the Killer Innovations podcast are college students. And I'm getting now lots of requests from college students to come speak to their classes. And I do that. In fact, I'm going to be giving a couple of speeches in the Washington, D.C. area here, both in nonprofit groups and with some college students. So, but it's interesting that, you know, a lot of the listeners of the podcast are, I shouldn't say a significant amount, but a fair amount, at least from the feedback that I get, are college students. And it's interesting, and hopefully, you know, that they're finding this podcast useful from the standpoint of at least sharing some of, you know, my experiences. One of the things that Bob got me hooked on early on was audio motivational tapes. There was a guy that came up through the 60s and 70s by the name of Earl Nightingale. Earl has died a number of years ago. He founded a company in Chicago called Nightingale Conant. You can actually go online and find it. And Earl Nightingale was one of the original guys who did motivational speaking, and he recorded it on vinyl. You know, LP vinyls that you could buy, come home, play on your turntable. And then he made the drastic jump to putting his audio recordings onto cassette tape. And Nightingale Conant had a monthly audio magazine. So you paid, it was like some outlandish amount. I think I was paying something like, and this is back in 82, 83, 84, I was paying $70 a year for an audio subscription. Meaning I got one tape a month. And you know something? I still have every one of those audio tapes and I still listen to them. Going back and re-listening. You can think of it as kind of a subscription version of podcasting. Earl would put together a tape once a month that had probably 90 minutes of recording on one side, and on the other side of the tape, it would be an interview or a speech given by some thought leader in the industry. And it was kind of interesting that when podcasting first came out, the first flashback I had was the listening to Earl Nightingale back in the 80s, once a month, listening to his thoughts, the lessons learned he had in his career, things that he had read, things that he'd come around. And in many cases, I've attempted to kind of model the podcast structure and the way that I do this around what I really enjoyed, which was these monthly audio magazines from Earl Nightingale. Also, going back to the original question as to why I do this, well, this podcast is kind of my way of hopefully of what's called pay it forward. I don't ask for anything in return. Hopefully you find the information useful. And hopefully if you have gone through your career and you've gone through the bumps and bruises, you are mentoring. Many of the listeners in this podcast are in the creative field or who are working in the areas of innovation, or you've just been successful in your career. Find that young spark. Find that young individual who that you can bring under your wings and that you can mentor. Not that they have to work for you, but make that investment. Pay it forward. You know, your obligation with this podcast is to do the same. You know, share what you've heard, share your own work experiences, share it with others. And all I ask is that you pay it forward also. Moving on to segment two, the week signals for this week. It's interesting, I've been kind of looking at a number of the online systems and online environments, and particularly I've been looking at eBay. And when you look at the history of eBay, it's allowed people to take their, you know, junk in their garage, their hobbies, their areas of interest, and turn it into cash. And when you look at kind of the market trends that are occurring out there, some people have gone to the point of naming this kind of signal or trend as what's called minipreneur, you know, kind of the microscopic version of the entrepreneur. And when you look at eBay, this has provided the vehicle to create literally a whole new of microeconomy that is occurring. Now, in the case of eBay, you know, eBay has, you know, been quite successful. But when you look at the income of each of the individuals who are selling and buying on eBay, each one of them, it's relatively small in the grand scheme of things. When they aggregate up, they equal literally the economy that eBay has unleashed. These minipreneurs are made up of individual-based businesses. So these are typically somebody working out of their home. It typically is also a sideline to their main income. They have a normal job. This is something that they're doing on the side. And it's usually built around a hobby or a skill. Now, this came to fruition through the experience that I had with a friend named John. Now, I'm not going to use John's last name because I don't want him inundated with emails. But John was the chief information officer for two major financial institutions, and he was the CIO for three major government agencies. Had an extremely successful career. He retired. And he collected what is called pre-canceled stamps. These are specific kind of stamps that literally are pre-canceled. Now, the key with pre-canceled stamps is that you buy, when you go off to buy them, John would literally buy them in lots, boxes and boxes full of these pre-canceled stamps. I'm sure his wife thought that he was going to fill up the entire house. I mean, these stamps were everywhere. eBay came along, and he got into now converting what was typically a hobby area of interest for him into the income. Now, he didn't really need the income. Career had been quite successful. He was very well off in his retirement. But what turned out to be of interest for him was the understanding of the psychology of other stamp collectors. So he would look at creating special kind of bundles, pre-canceled stamps, all from a specific state, such as the state of Illinois, colors, corner stamps, certain kinds of cancellations, where the cancellation was in relation to the position of the stamp. So he went through and looked at all the different kinds of ways he could bundle these products up and sell them. And over like a two-year period, he had a very good understanding of what people were willing to pay and what they were not willing to pay. At some point, someone actually predicted that John had probably 30-35% of the total canceled stamp supply in the world in his possession. And because of the amount of selling that he was doing on eBay, he became pretty much the gold standard for defining what the price point was in that particular niche market. So here's a guy who didn't need to really do it for income, started this business using eBay, and not only defined a new market area, but became the gold standard to define, you know, what constituted a good value, in this case, pre-canceled stamps. Now, the key here is, what I'm not talking about is that it's only tied to an eBay kind of a structure. Prior to eBay, there were other means, or other, I should say, structures that allowed for the creation of these mini-preneurs, such as multi-level marketing, any kind of at-home business. All of this has allowed for these waves of these mini-preneurs. Now, in the case of multi-level marketing and others, you had to have a certain level of motivation. You had to have a certain skill set of selling. You had to have what I would call the annoyance factor, being able to go knocking on the doors of your neighbors and continually pursue them to buy whatever product or service you were selling. In the case of eBay, it allowed those people to who maybe didn't have the interpersonal skills or who didn't want to have quite that level of motivation, but still had something of interest that other people were willing to pay. So we saw this huge explosion in the creation of mini-preneurs once eBay got its traction. So the key here, though, is that as a weak signal with mini-preneurs, one of the questions that we need to be able to look at honestly and use it to identify those next killer ideas is what are the needs of mini-preneurs that are unserved today? So what are the unserved needs of these mini-preneurs? Now, we've seen some that have popped up, such as, you know, the eBay for Dummies books, and now there's actually physical locations. If you don't want to go on to eBay and mess with creating the auction and writing your material up and all that, you actually can take your goods to a physical location. They're scattered around the country. They'll take the photos, they'll post it, they'll run the auction, and then they keep a piece of the auction, and they'll take care of shipping the goods to the customer and all of those things. So that was an unserved need, because albeit eBay is interesting, you got to get set up, you got to take pictures, you got to upload those pictures, you got to write the description, you got to monitor the auctions. Then you got to package up those goods, you got to ship them to the customer, you got to get paid, you know, all the little, you know, hassles that go along with it. One of the unserved needs that recently got served is the formation of these companies, physical locations. You can drop off your eBay goods, and in return, they will actually post it and sell it. Another question that we need to be able to answer is what could you, how could you modify your existing products or services for the mini-preneur market? What is it that you're selling today? What is the service that you're providing today that potentially could be attractive to the mini-preneur market? And by looking at these two questions, hopefully you can come up with that killer idea. Moving on to segment three, the killer question of the week. And it's kind of tied to this whole thing around eBay and some of the underlying processes that eBay goes through to identify new minipreneur markets that they want to serve. So this week's killer question is, who is doing something under extreme conditions with my product or service? Again, the killer question of the week is, who is doing something under extreme conditions with my product or service? And then the obvious next question is why? And is there a market for that? So in the case of eBay, what eBay found was is that, you know, initially the customers were selling things like stamp collections and plate collection and prints, Pez dispensers. But what they quickly figured out once they started looking at a bunch of the auction was is that people were actually selling cars, houses, boats, recreational vehicles, timeshares. In fact, some people even got more creative and were selling body parts, which eBay quickly stomped on and said that that was a no-no. So the key here, though, is eBay jumped in and learned that there were people who were using eBay to do something extreme, meaning something kind of out of the anticipated norm for that product or service. But what did eBay do? They didn't stop it. They went ahead and created new products or services to serve those specific needs. So in this case, in the form of auto, I don't know about you, but in the early days, if I wanted to buy an auto off of eBay, you had all the concerns about, you know, the photo and the description, was it accurate? Meaning when the car arrived or when I got the car, was it going to be as good as mint condition as was being described on eBay? Was it going to run? Did it have more miles on it? Did it, you know, all the things that you worry about when you think about buying a car. So what did eBay do? They stepped in. They provide an inspection service. So if you can't, if you're in Washington, D.C. and you buy a car from somebody in Seattle, you're not going to fly out there to do an inspection on a couple thousand dollar car when it's going to cost you that much more, that much in an airplane ticket. So eBay provides an inspection and certification service by a mechanic. And they also then will also provide the transportation. They have set it up with the car carriers to pick up your vehicle and deliver it to you at your home. So here's a case where someone was using eBay in an extreme condition, and eBay stepped in, saw that extreme condition, understood that there were needs that were unmet in order in that use of the extreme condition, and stepped in and did something about it. So again, who is doing something under extreme conditions with my product or service? This is a great source for market identification, finding out those niches that are using your product or service, and also understanding the needs and requirements for those niche markets so that you can step in and capture the opportunity. Also, this is a great way to reinforce the idea of looking at the fringe for that next killer idea. With that, we're going to wrap things up. Thanks for listening. Please keep the feedback coming. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can send me a voicemail feedback at 703-636-4460. Or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. Now remember to vote. Go out to Podcast Alley. Your vote is the easiest way to say thanks to the producers of your favorite podcasts. And remember, you can go and vote for each of your favorite podcasts each and every month at Podcast Alley. At the end, I'm going to play one more additional feedback that came in on the voicemail feedback line, so stay past the end to listen to one more feedback comment. Thanks for listening. Get subscribed at killerinnovations.com or visit Apple iTunes. Get others to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, Phil. This is Hilmer Reyes calling from Lima, Peru. I'm originally from Peru. I spent the last 17 or so years in the U.S., and I just finished an associate's degree at the Kennedy School at Harvard, looking at things like economic development and innovation policy and things of that sort. And I'm very interested in the topic. I just discovered your podcast about a week and a half ago, so I've been very busy listening and catching up, which I finally did. So I wanted to leave you a message and thank you for the work that you're doing. It's wonderful to hear the things that you've learned, and we hope to apply it to the things that we're doing in Peru. Some friends and I from the Kennedy School and the Harvard Business School have starting up an NGO called Gen Worldwide, Global Entrepreneurship Network. It's at www.gen-worldwide.org, and you can visit there and see what kinds of things we're doing, and we're definitely hoping to use some of the things we're learning from your podcast to work with entrepreneurs and innovators in developing countries, in this case Peru. You can also reach me via Skype, Reyes HH, and hopefully we can be in touch and I can tell you more about what we're doing, and you know, how we hope to apply some of the things that we're learning with you on the podcast. Thanks a lot and good luck.